You're listening to the Holistic Travel Nurse Podcast. I'm going to share a little bit of what's been going on and what I have, the clips you can go watch in my Telegram. We'll get into a little bit of natural healing and nutrition and physical degeneration in this episode, but we'll start with dill big tree. I think the highwire.com is exposing things and just not even getting enough views or listens when it comes to the important things that he is sharing. So this is a small clip.
About a year ago, 28 people got together, all volunteers, and formed Tennessee Liberty Network. It's a small think tank here in Tennessee. Okay. We're not controlled by anyone. Nobody gives us money for anything. And we wanted to do some research into the CARES Act money coming into the state to find out how exactly all the different areas of our state were affected by that money. We didn't find anything really untoward there, but when the American Rescue Plan Act was signed by Joe Biden in March, early March of 2021, was about the same time that we started going to school board meetings and discovering that there was this very disturbing trend of parents and citizens standing in front of school boards crying and begging for their kids to be unmasked. And yet the school board members kind of sat there glassy-eyed and sort of like a zombies, almost like they didn't have a say-so in the matter. Right. So we decided to dig into that and discovered that the school boards really don't have a choice in the matter.
Okay, how's that?
In the CARES Act, ESSER money, that's elementary and secondary school emergency relief money, was ESSER 1 and 2 were released under the CARES Act.
Okay.
ESSER 3 money, which was more than any money ever given to schools ever by the government, was released shortly after Biden signed the ARP Act in March 2021.
Okay.
And yes, this is a great graphic here because you can see that in December 2020, the CDC released a report saying that it would only cost $25 billion to get every single school in the United States up and running.
Okay.
And to date, schools have been given almost $200 billion
wow.
in COVID relief money. Yeah, big carrot, right?
Yeah,
big
huge, carrot. Huge. Where's that money going?
Well, it was going to a lot of things to help schools with, you know, a lot with like teleschool choices,
right.
because a lot of the rural schools didn't have ways for kids to attend school online. So that was really great to do. And, you know, a lot of health related things, a lot of sanitation issues
okay.
you know, being fixed in schools. But we started to ask, you know, why if COVID is so deadly and masks are so necessary, why aren't there any OSHA regulated hazmat bins in schools?
Right.
Something's up with this. It can't be about health and safety like they're telling us. So we looked into the ESSER 3 money, which is the most schools are given.
Okay.
And we found that Tennessee had to submit a district plan. And not only Tennessee, we discovered that every state submitted their district plan. Our Commissioner of Education, Penny Schwinn, submitted our plan. It was approved by Miguel Cardona, the Secretary of Education up in the swamp. And this plan is something that schools have to submit every 6 months through September of 2023. And they have to prove how they are universally masking children. Find this online and look for it in your state and go to the requirements. To get this money, they have to do these things: universal and correct wearing of masks,
okay.
physical distancing, hand washing, cleaning, ventilation, contact tracing, quarantines, isolation, and the second to last on the list is vaccinations. This is why they're getting the money.
So when we're standing there as parents,
to do with health and safety.
So when we're standing there as parents at these school board meetings and saying, get the mask off my kid, they're getting rashes on their face, my kid's depressed, they haven't seen their teacher smile, they're not interacting socially, I see them failing, and we just see those blank stares because that school board knows I'm not going to turn down, what is it, $10 million or $15 million to listen to you?
Much more than that.
Really?
In Tennessee, Shelby County, Memphis, Shelby
yeah.
County gets almost $750 million in COVID relief funds.
For education, to the schools?
Yeah, to the school system, Shelby County school systems. Nashville Public Schools is $500 million in COVID relief funds. But to get that money, they have to prove how they are fulfilling these requirements. Universal masking, contact tracing, isolation, quarantine, vaccinations for all students, staff, and teachers. To get that money, they have to fulfill those requirements. That's what we discovered, and every state is doing it. So we want parents to stop going before school boards and crying and begging them to release their kids from masks. Just stop it, okay? Find this information in your state. Contact us and we'll help you. We'll point you in the direction to find this information. Take this in front of your school boards and confront them. Ask them, how much money are you taking from the federal government to commit this egregious, tyrannical behavior on our kids? And if they don't know, tell them how much it is and tell them to give that money back.
Fantastic. Absolutely. I mean, this is something that I suspected. I suspected that this is going on. There's got to be a payoff that's going on here because it doesn't make sense. These school boards aren't acting naturally. And they don't seem to care. And so that is huge. Hundreds of millions of dollars just in one school district there. And you're saying that's happening all around the world. Of course, they're not going to walk away from this. So when, as parents, we got to recognize, like, you got to know your enemy, right? Your enemy is money. Right now, you are asking your school board, when you're thinking it's just about a mask and whether they care about your kids, they're not going to walk away from hundreds of millions of dollars that are coming again. Here's all of Tennessee.
Right.
All right, look at that. Look at these are the numbers as they break down.
2.4 million.
Literally billions of dollars being funded to imprison your child, to socially distance them, to shut down their school or make them wear masks. All of that is being funded against you by your president, by our administration, and probably more specifically, a lot of this comes out of the NIH and the FDA, CDC, all these. Mm-hmm. So Tony Fauci is probably behind a huge part of this and those that represent that. This is how a small group of people infect and make everybody evil. They force them into it by funding them, giving them the biggest carrot known to man. So how does this translate? I started by talking about hospitals, and we're seeing this incredibly almost like planned out death rate. We've talked about some of the funding. You decided to sort of get into hospitals too, right?
Yeah, Tennessee Liberty Network, about the time that we finished wrapping up our deep dive on the education money, we started getting calls from people looking for help because they had loved ones in hospitals that were dying. And we started looking at the cases in Tennessee. And to date, we've lost about 20,880 people in Tennessee in hospitals. These people aren't dying at home from COVID. They're dying in our hospitals. So we started looking into that and tracking the money from the ARP Act as well. And then we figured that there had to be more than just the ARP. And so our research has led us to discovering that the CMS is also heavily involved in funding hospitals and these deadly protocols. And so we confront these hospitals daily now. Mm-hmm. We formed another organization called the Adam Group, and we have a website, theadamgroup.net.
Thank you. Great.
There it is. And our goal is to educate people on how to prevent COVID because it is preventable.
Right.
And how to treat COVID at home because it can be treated at home without going to a hospital. Number one goal is to keep people out of hospitals because we know from experience what happens there. And the advocacy work that we do with people who are in hospitals, it's the stuff of nightmares. It's nightmares. In Tennessee hospitals get $166,000 for every COVID patient in a hospital.
What?
$166,000.
I mean, I remember
West Virginia.
Hold on, though. $166,000. I'm trying to wrap my head around that because I remember we've talked about, early on, it seemed like there was like $13,000 to be diagnosed with COVID. I remember something like $26,000 being reported, and Scott Jensen, who I believe is running for Senate, risked his. Oh, actually, I think he's running for governor. up in Minnesota. But he came out and said, we're being incentivized here, folks, to take anyone we can to make them a COVID patient and then to put them on a ventilator. And so those numbers were like 13,000, 26,000. But you're saying, oh, my God. So these are other states. Nebraska is getting 379,000 per COVID patient in the hospital. West Virginia, 471,000, 339,000 North Dakota. So what do they have to do to get that money for that patient?
They have to follow the NIH protocol for the treatment of COVID in hospitals. And they will tell you, oh, we don't follow NIH guidelines. We follow the CDC guidelines for inpatient treatment of COVID in hospitals. But if you go to the CDC website, yeah, it points you right to this document right here, the NIH protocols.
So CDC, the they say, no, we go to CDC, but that puts you back to NIH, who's
right,
really actually in
right.
charge.
It'll point you right back to the NIH. It's right there on their website. There's a link that says, this is the protocol that we follow, the CDC, and it right. takes you right to the NIH website. There's a link there. So they can try to obfuscate and point you in another direction, but it all leads back to those NIH protocols that in those protocols, the only approved EAU drugs for the use for use in hospitals for COVID starts with remdesivir.
Right.
And the reason why other countries don't have the death rates we do is because the United States for the whole year of 2021 was the only country that was allowed to use remdesivir.
Wow.
Fauci
lucky
and
us.
His team bought,
lucky us.
Yeah. I know. They bought it all up.
A failed, as I put it out, and if you're brand new, a failed Ebola drug that was so toxic, they said, you're better off with Ebola. We're pulling it out of this trial.
Right.
But, hey, let's use it for a really bad cold and give it to everybody. And when I think about this, right, we send people into hospitals. Once they get there, I mean, first we send you home if you don't have low enough oxygen levels, because for the first time in history, early treatment is not the answer. Go home, get more sick, then come back to us when your lips are blue. We put you on
so
a ventilator.
We
give you remdesivir. What is remdesivir? Shuts down your kidneys, which fills your lungs mm-hmm. with water. Now we say you're dying of pneumonia. It's actually a side effect of remdesivir, and boom, perfect line of deaths of everybody walking to hospitals. Well done. Are they incentivizing it, though? Are they beyond that? Do you get paid in any way, like the ventilators or things like that that we're talking about?
Yeah, I think Dr. Jensen said it earlier on your show, $39,000 for every COVID patient on a vent. They get paid. Hospitals get paid a fortune just on these faulty PCR tests. They get the tests for free. The government pays every time they administer a test. They pay for every positive test. They pay for every test that results in a hospitalization. So they make a fortune just off the faulty tests alone. Then they get paid for every COVID patient, the $166,000 in Tennessee. And then they get $39,000 for every COVID patient on a vent. Plus there's a 20% bonus add-on, which is a weird thing to call something when you're murdering people. There you go, 20%. For using remdesivir and the ventilators, and the CMS is responsible for that. That's the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare. They've got their hands all, their fingerprints are everywhere, all over extra payments to hospitals for killing people. But here's what I want to point out about the NIH protocol, because people are going to court begging for the use of ivermectin and HCQ. Yeah. If you go to the NIH protocols and you read those protocols, believe me, we've read them cover to cover, and it's a big document, but there's very valuable information in there, because ivermectin is actually listed as number 4 in
as
that
possible
document.
Treatments or usable but, treatments for it. Right.
Right. It's in the NIH protocols, but the FDA has not given ivermectin an EAU approval to be used for the treatment of COVID in hospitals. It's in there, but remdesivir and those covered countermeasures like remdesivir and the ventilators are the only ones that are covered under the EUA for use in hospitals.
Wow.
And if you want to throw one more wrench in the spokes, the PrEP Act. The PrEP Act protects all the hospitals and doctors from full liability
killing you with products that don't work. Right.
Yeah, for injury, even death. They're completely protected, but not if they use ivermectin. It's only for the covered countermeasures, and that's remdesivir and ventilators.
I mean, that's,
but I want people to go, I want people to go to page 33 of the NIH protocols, because On page 33, there is a section called Evolving Knowledge on Treatment of COVID-19. And in that section, it clearly says that providers can access and prescribe investigational drugs, even off-label drugs like ivermectin. And the very last paragraph, it says it's important to stress that the rated treatment recommendations in these guidelines should not be considered mandates. The choice of what to do or not to do for an individual patient is ultimately decided by the patient and their provider. So anybody who's out there fighting to get ivermectin and they're in court and they have a lawyer, take page 33 out of the NIH, because this gives the hospital permission. They may not make all the money that they make off of remdesivir and the ventilators, but this gives them permission to do it. And if a lot of doctors in hospitals really, if they take their Hippocratic Oath seriously and they read this from the NIH, maybe, just maybe, they can form a coalition and start fighting back against these hospital protocols and saving
Fantastic.
Some lives.
Fantastic. AJ DePriest, that's amazing work. And I want you to really listen to what's just happened here. When you're advocating for your loved one in a hospital, should it get that dire, hopefully you've been watching the show, you're taking all of the different things that, you know, we take here. You got your zinc, you know, up levels up, your vitamin D levels, we now know are very important. You're doing the preventative things, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. I hope you have, you know, your stash ready to go should that moment come. And look, there's always a chance in any situation that it gets out of your control. I understand that. But if you find yourself in a hospital and they're not treating you properly, look what you're up against. That hospital wants to make that $350,000 being handed to them by these ghouls, by these people that are pushing up an agenda and a plan, whether it's to kill you on purpose. I mean, it's hard to imagine that it's not with those levels of numbers. That funding is coming to do the things that are going to kill your loved one. That's really great advice in their own websites. And this is what we do here. We use their own evidence against them. They're telling you that ivermectin is acceptable. You're just not going to get payment. So when you're looking at the hospital, remember that doctor does care about you. They don't even realize that it's their boss, the hospital owners, these hospital malls that are taking these incentives and laying the mandate down saying, you know, ivermectin doesn't work and neither does hydroxychloroquine, because they need to make that money. And that's why they need to do it. You know, AJ, we looked up a number. We looked at something when I knew you were going to come on. I want you to take a look at this because I think it really just puts an exclamation point on the work that you've done. We looked at back, this is July 17th of 2020, Health and Human Services announces additional distribution of funds to hospitals with high COVID-19 admissions, meaning we want you to have high admissions. Remember, we started shutting down oncology units. We started shutting down the heart, you know, programs and the diabetes only to cover COVID. Why? Because we're going to give you extra money. And in that document, it basically lays out that we're going to give you, I think it was $50,000. HHS will distribute funds in hospitals with more than 161 COVID-19 admissions during this time period, which equates to one admission per day. It also will distribute funds to those hospitals that experienced a disproportionate intensity of COVID-19. So get those cases into your hospital that exceed the average ratio of COVID-19 admissions and beds. Hospitals will be paid $50,000 per eligible admission. Look, that's July 17th, 2020. You want to see something really interesting? Remember, we shut down half of our hospitals. All that money that comes in for cancer, all that money that comes in for heart disease disappeared. All there was with COVID. Well, look, this is just one of the hospital systems that's, this is the stock tracking. Look at the S&P 500. Look, it tracks. The green there is this HCA. That's a hospital group that does very well. It kind of goes right along with the index. But look, right in there around May and then July, you start handing them giant funding. Look what happens to their stock. They stop treating cancer. They stop treating heart disease. No money coming in from anything else except the government paying you to kill people with remdesivir and ventilators, and now you're more profitable than you've ever been. That is absolutely shocking, and it's deplorable, and I don't think it's going to age well in our history books.
No, it's not. Del, there is a hospital very close to me here in Tennessee that was interviewed for an article in a paper, and they were bragging about how for the second year in a row, they're operating in the black after never operating in the black. And they were bragging about all the new equipment and technology they were going to buy and all the new wings they were going to build to the tune of about $19 million. It was disgusting because that hospital alone, we've lost almost 24 COVID patients in. They've killed them by remdesivir and ventilators. Wow. So we want communities to start getting more involved. And when you know these hospitals are doing that, the people of that community need to show up at that hospital in mass and start telling them that you as a community are going to be advocating for every single COVID patient that walks through those doors. And you are going to hold that hospital accountable for their patient bill of rights.
That is why I do not work at a hospital. She goes forward and this only stops when people rise up and we put a stop to it because there's a lot of money. And I feel like we're David and Goliath right now. And I was praying about this and I'm like, Lord, I could not work in the hospitals and see this shit anymore. That's why I literally left the hospitals. And if you're a nurse listening to this, it is time to freaking rise and use your voice and do the damn research yourself. And either you are on the side of killing people or you're on the side of taking your oath seriously. I was going to talk about nutrition and the physical generation. That book was very interesting. It's like this long study. And it's funny because Dr. Weston Price was ignored. And because Big Pharma, because of the Rockefellers, he was completely ignored. We can't be silent or we are literally watching people die. And so let's continue.
Giving pregnant women DPT and flu shots containing squalene, mercury, all of that, and knowing that the current pertussis shot in the DPT doesn't even cover the current types of pertussis. I've always thought that that was insane. And that began in the 90s. Giving pregnant women anything when we were worried about giving them fish because of the mercury in fish. And now to have my entire profession, almost to a person, except for this Dr. James Thorpe, who I just found, who's in Florida and St. Louis. And this guy is a maternal fetal medicine specialist and is taking on the American Board of OBGYN, of which I am board certified by that group. I just am loving this guy taking that on. He said, there is not one shred of evidence that this is safe. And we do, in fact, have evidence about how unsafe it is. There's one study, how this managed to get by the overlords is beyond me. And this is from Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law, November of 2021. And this study shows from Brock and Thornley that the use of the mRNA vaccines in pregnancy, they're not vaccines, actually has increased the rate of miscarriage, spontaneous abortion is what it's known in my particular field, from 1 in 6 to 7 to 8 times that. If you get this shot before 20 weeks of pregnancy, your chance of a miscarriage goes up 7 to 8 times over the baseline of what it normally is. And then there's all of these reports of the placenta becoming aged, like it looks in intrauterine growth retardation, where the blood vessels close off and it looks like it's getting old and decrepit from all the blood clotting. Mm-hmm. We then have babies with immune system abnormalities, fetal defects, and then we have babies that die or have strokes when their mother gets the shot and then is breastfeeding. I believe this is a crime against humanity that is beyond anything that I can imagine. And I believe that Thorpe points out about 300,000 women give birth every year. And then if you go with the fact that the VAERS report is only about 1%, maybe 10%, we're looking at probably already over 100,000 fetal deaths above what it should be. And then I was on a thing with Mel Kay 2 days ago. She has a friend who's been an undertaker for 30 years. He said, I have never buried so many children and babies, mm-hmm. not in my entire career.
If you're not reading the book and understanding what the heck the Bible is saying in the end times, this has got to be so disheartening and so freaking hard to listen to. Okay, let's go to the next one.
7 days a week. I've tested over 80,000 people, and I have treated about 2,000 people. I'm a good doctor. I fight for my patients. I treat my patients the way I would want myself treated. I've been on the other end of the patient-physician relationship as a mom of four boys. I basically spent 5 years as a patient, 5 straight years of pregnancy. So I know what it's like. And when I opened this practice, my intention was to treat people the way I would want to be treated as a patient and to treat people the way I would treat a loved one. And that is how I have treated my patients during COVID. So it was quite a surprise to me last Friday when I got a text message from the Houston Chronicle telling me that my hospital privileges had been suspended. It's not the way things like this are normally handled. I have very loose ties to Methodist. I only have privileges there in case I have a patient that is so sick that they need to be hospitalized. And I'm proud to say that because of my early and aggressive treatment for patients with COVID, I have not needed to admit anybody to Methodist. So I'm not quite sure why I became their target, although I think based on their history of being the first hospital in the country to mandate vaccines for their employees, that they are using me as an example based on what they have read, which I have not sent to them, but I've sent to my patients, and I have vocalized on Twitter. But since when is that a reason to take away somebody's hospital privileges, try to take away their license? I'm not saying Methodist is doing that, but there are groups that are targeting doctors like myself that are just simply trying to speak about what they are seeing. And I don't have research papers to back what I'm doing personally. I have tons of data. I have tons of clinical experience. And when I speak to my patients about what's going on, it's based on my clinical experience. And that should be good enough. And I'm not sure in this day and age, apparently it's not. It's astounding to me as a physician that I'm not entitled to my medical opinion. I think this is hopefully, this is not how I wanted to be. I would like to go back to my clinic and stop. I do not want to be in the media, and I do not appreciate the way Methodist handled this. I'm simply trying to help my patients.
So there are some good doctors that have cared and that have known, even though they only know pharmaceutical medicine, they're trying to do the right thing, and their voices are being heard, not heard. And they're like being silenced and jobs taken away. It's just interesting that we've gone this far. Let's listen to this one too.
I can say for sure in 2021, this is the year of pneumonia. Independent of COVID, I've never seen people with so many pneumonia, sepsis. And even in the middle of summer, all summer, that's what we would get in the hospitals, pneumonia. After the vaccine rollout, I definitely noticed an uptick in heart attacks, strokes, blood clots, gastrointestinal bleeds, gastrointestinal complaints, appendicitis. We even saw pancreatitis, recurrent cancers. It was noticeably increased, where it wasn't just me noticing it, everybody seemed to notice it. It became clear to me that there was something wrong. I knew nothing of VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. I didn't know about our responsibility to report. It was never even talked about when these vaccines were rolled out. I mean, you'd hear it in the news here and there, but there was never this push to make sure providers were made aware that if you're getting patients in the hospital with issues, these issues, whatever, that here, you got to go to this website and start reporting and start paying attention to stuff. That was never educated to us at all. And I went on the website, I looked, and the first thing I noticed was that it said healthcare providers are required by law to report certain adverse reactions to VAERS. And I said, what do you mean? Like, what law? So, and then you look further, and it had a whole section on it, exactly what you're supposed to report. Specific things you're supposed to report to VAERS after the COVID vaccine rollout. So that's when I started reporting patients on my own. Well, very quickly, that became a full-time job in and of itself. I would say within 3 weeks to a month, I had already had 50 patients reported. And that was just of the providers that were willing to tell me about patients, recognize that there may be a problem. So I went back to my administration and I said, I need help. You know, I can't do this all myself. It's overwhelming. I'm on the phone with the CDC all the time. I'm on the phone with these patients. I need more people to know about it so they can help me and we can do the right thing. But that was met with then resistance, because that's when the vaccines were really starting to get pushed. Everybody's got to get vaccinated. This is how it's going to go. And by me admitting that we need to report because there may be some issues, it would create vaccine hesitancy amongst the healthcare workers, amongst the staff, amongst the other staff, amongst the patients. Well, that's when things changed, because I wouldn't be quiet about it. And what I did was I put envelopes in our emergency room and told many of the providers, hey, if you get a patient that comes in and they just got their vaccine, or you think something might be related in any way, go ahead and put their demographics in the envelope, and then I'll take care of it and call the patient and get the report done. Thinking it was only going to be a few reports a week, no. It turned into, like I said, a full-time job very quickly.
And I'm sure she was fired. The recording, the conversation, here's the when she was talking.
I don't know that it's a matter of not wanting to report it. I think the position the system has taken is that each provider has a responsibility to report on their own patients.
But if the providers aren't provided education on what we're supposed to be reporting and the importance of such, how do they know to do it?
But I believe the providers should educate themselves when they're dealing with patients related to COVID vaccination.
They don't even realize that these are specifically the conditions that we're supposed to be reporting to their. So when we had a ton of them, I mean, we get thrombocytopenia, blood spots. Just Tuesday, I think it was, we shipped out, I think, 3 cardiomyopathies, blood clots. We got a guy on the floor, and well, he just died, I just pronounced him a second ago, who got his shot, and literally 2 weeks later, the guy ends up with cancer blown out of nowhere, a portal vein thrombus, like, just... We get strokes. I had a lady that had a stroke within 48 hours of her vaccine, fully on anticoagulation. I had a lady have a bilateral PE, and she was on Eliquis after her vaccination. I know these are things that are reportable.
That our hospital system talked to their risk management team, and I was no longer allowed to report on any other patient but patients of my own that I saw, where there was a warning that I was told I must support the vaccine effort.
Hello, there are people speaking up. None of this shit is being talked about. None of it's being talked about. And it saddens me. And if you've not known about Dr. David Martin, I've shared his stuff over and over and over. I will go back and listen to those episodes. And here we go.
Situation is this. If you have COVID and you end up in the hospital, you're put on a rigid protocol. And there is high mortality rate in the hospital, and your family is kept in the dark as to what's happening. So what's going on here? Number one, the CARES Act is providing bonus payments to hospitals whenever you have a diagnosis of COVID. And then number two, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services is waiving patient rights. This is a deadly combination. So here's what happens. You get a payment because you offer a free COVID test in the emergency room. You get a boost payment if you have a diagnosis of COVID. Number three, you get another bonus payment if you are admitted with COVID. Number four, you get another bonus payment if you're put on remdesivir. Number five, another bonus payment if you're put on a mechanical ventilator. Number six, another 20% bonus if the diagnosis on your death certificate says COVID, even though you may not have died from COVID. And then number seven, there's bonus payments to coroners. Do you understand the gravity of what's happening right now? The Biden administration is literally paying hospitals to kill you. That's what's happening. This is terrible. We need to stop that. These are real human lives we're talking about. They're priceless. It's estimated at about $100,000 per patient is what the hospital's getting. Think about that. Ladies and gentlemen, the real news of right now continues on the next front.
I have to end it there and go pray and share this episode, because I think I put a combination of really good stuff all in this one, and it's important, and you want to keep your loved ones out of the death camps, the hospitals right now.